shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.
Everybody, happy Monday night. Welcome from LaFoos Live right here on Spreaker Radio. Spreaker, TuneIn, Spotify, Carrier Pigeon, Smoke Signals, you name it. That's where we got it. That's where it's coming from. But we are live as live can be, as the only, number one, digital audio live broadcast award winning that hasn't won a damn award yet. Although, we are regularly appearing in the top of the food charts and the arts charts on iTunes now, which that's pretty fucking cool. I'm down with that. What's going on, guys? Hope you guys are having a great night. Hope your week is off to a great start as we get ready to have a wonderful holiday weekend, which I'm sure the rest of us here in the world, as far as chefs, means we all have to cook, you know? That's what it means for me, at least. I have to cook. I don't mind cooking. It's a good thing I don't mind cooking, right? Because that's what I fucking do for a living. But I don't mind it specifically for this holiday, because it's one of my favorite holidays, man. I mean, who doesn't love making food? And it's one of those things where we kind of get into it and we make lots of foods that we don't make on a daily basis or on a regular basis. I think we should, though. Listen, I love Thanksgiving food. I love turkey. Turkey's delicious. Stuffing is delicious. All these things are fantastic. How do we not have these things on a regular basis? I don't know. I would love to have them. I think they taste awesome, but we just don't do it. We keep it on a very holiday level. And for me, I don't know, man. Like, it just seems like we should make them on a more regular basis. I think I say this every single fucking year on this program, how we should do that. Listen, I love making holiday food. It's great to me. It's a great experience. By the way, my name is Chef Plum. Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live. We appreciate you guys joining us tonight here on a Monday. It's like we are coming nonstop at you. We had a Thursday night show, then we had the Monday night show. It's been quite a bit, man. It really has. So, looking forward to tonight's episode. We're going to be continuing our Portrait of a Chef series. We're talking to a wonderful chef out of Louisiana, which we'll talk to him here shortly. He's a good brother. He's got some good stories, and it should be a lot of fun talking to him. Patrick Trahan is going to join us. Looking forward to chat with him. But in the meantime, before we get to the chef tonight, I had a question for you guys. What does it mean to give, right? You know, because as chefs, I feel like we constantly give. We constantly are cooking food for people and giving and giving and giving, but it's our job to do that. But do you think that too many people forget that that's our job? They forget that that's what we're supposed to do? They forget that in our business is feeding people and keeping people happy? You know, I think about that a lot, especially during Thanksgiving. And then I was humbled enough to go spend some time with the U.S. Navy yesterday. And big shout out to those guys. And thanks for having us. It was a great time. And look forward to the event we're working on together. But you see these guys over there, and I don't think they ever forget what it means to give. And let me tell you what I mean. Because honestly, we're there, and these guys are out to sea. They're on their on the subs. They're out for, I mean, 70 days, 75 days, 90 days, 3 months, 4 months. I mean, it's a long time, right? These guys are out there, and they have one cook who cooks for 125 people. It's crazy, man, what happens on those boats. And the information that I learned was quite shocking. And I want to we'll get into it a little bit if we want to. But, like, it's just the point I want to make is that when the boats come in, the chefs and the people who work in the galleys, they make a point to try to make great food and make it very, like, you know, heartwarming and delicious and great for the sailors. And to me, that's, I mean, that really kind of epitomizes giving when you look at this. Because, I mean, listen, it's we all, as chefs and cooks, we cook for a living. Like, we constantly make food every day to try to make people happy. That's our goal. We service an industry where we try to make people happy. And I think a lot of people forget that. They forget that that's what we're supposed to be doing. But after being with the Navy yesterday and seeing how they do it, they don't forget that at all. That's almost become their mantra. you know, even some of the guys who I heard an amazing story. Let me switch gears. I heard an amazing story about a culinarian on a submarine who went around to everyone on the boat and found out like some information about their food that they had for Thanksgiving and holidays and whatnot. And this chef on the submarine made each individual, 125 people on the boat, their own individual plates to try to at least give them some semblance of being home for the holidays and just to remind them. And I mean, what a powerful moment, right, to have with food. And I mean, he brought some people to tears. I mean, these are, you know, some of the toughest men and women on the planet, and they were brought to tears by food, all because this gentleman remembered that giving is such an important thing. And for us as chefs, like I said, you know, I started this whole monologue, we give every single day, but it takes it to a new level when you're giving on a level of I guess service, right? And it really kind of brought me back. It brought some perspective to me and brought some perspective to my life and kind of how, as a chef, that's what we're supposed to do. We work with our hands. We make people happy. We make food, right? We nourish people. Try to remember that next time it gets busy on a Friday or Saturday night and you're getting your ass kicked on the line. Our job is to make people happy. That's what you signed up for. I know you're going to say, no, I signed up to be a chef. I signed up to cook food. I signed up to do... Well, it's in the definition, you're serving, right? You're serving food to people. Remember that. And remember, there's always somebody who's got it differently, man. I mean, I was thinking about today. I had quite a long day today. But even in that long day, I wasn't stuck on a submarine. And I have so much respect for those who are. I mean, guys, you have no idea. Like, it's the smallest giant thing I've ever seen, if that makes any sense. They're huge. They're enormous. They're massive. But the space inside of them, they have to fit so much equipment in there. It's crazy. This galley area where these guys cook, it's next level. It's so small, but they put out such great food and amazing food from it. It was shocking to me to see how, I don't know, like, it's a different world of food that you know, we don't think about, that we don't realize. I mean, we're all so stuck in our ways and stuck in our own lives, and not in a bad way, because it's busy and we have lives to live, and that's okay. But man, when you just see somebody else's life and how they live and how they, you know, how they make their living and how they work with food for them, you know, how working with food for them, it really is, man. It was amazing. So big shout out to those guys, and I tell you what, I hope you guys all kind of remember what the word, you know, what giving is, and giving 100% is serving, and that's what we do. We serve food. So don't forget that, man. Even those busy nights, I know it sucks. It can suck all the time when you're working. I know that, dude. But remember what you're here to do. Remember what the job is. It's in the definition of the word. We serve food, right? That's what I'm talking about. Anyway, you guys, that's my tirade. That's my rant for a little bit, man. Tonight we got a great show, man. We're gonna continue our Portrait of a Chef series with Patrick Trahan from Louisiana. He's a great guy, man. He is fantastic. He does a great job at what he does, and he's a good brother. And I love having good brothers on the show. I talked to him on the phone a little bit this evening. I see, I'm so fucked up with my timing. On the way home from work tonight, and you know, you can talk to somebody who's been in the business, and you can hear some of their stories, and you really can tell immediately what, yeah, you know, if they fit in, if they fall in, if they're on the same page as you. You know, that's a big shout out to Dimitri. I see your brother in the chat room. It's awesome. So hopefully you guys will find him as interesting as I did. The man's got some good stories, but more importantly, this series is to focus on some of these chefs who are out there hustling and trying to make things happen for the restaurants, hotels, private chefs, whatever they've got going on. That's what this series is all about, Portrait of a Chef. This is episode 2 of Portrait of a Chef here on Plum Love Foods Live. And guys, if you haven't done so yet, please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. It does amazing things for the algorithm. It helps us out a lot, and I know that you guys have all been doing it. Our ratings have gone up. Like, we're ranking. We're getting way more reviews, and that's great. So please keep that up. It's a huge help, because it helps me to be able to bring this show to you for free every week. And if you subscribe, it comes right to your phone. You guys know all this crap. And, of course, you can follow me on them Instagrams at chef_plum. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to go ahead and get to our guest this evening. He's a guy who's been in the business almost his entire life, man. He's the executive chef at Milano Restaurant that is in, see, this is the bad thing. I'm bad with saying these things. Houma, Louisiana. He's been around the block, man. He's got lots of great stories. Ladies and gentlemen, please, if you wouldn't mind, help me welcome Chef Patrick Trahan to Plum Love Foods. Chef, how are you this evening?
Hey, Chef, I'm doing well. How are you?
I feel like I messed up your last name again. Did I fuck it up?
It's Trahan.
That's kind of what I said, but it wasn't like as perfect as you did, but we'll just say I tried. How about that?
Where I'm from, if you're west of the Mississippi River, it's Trahan. If you're east of the Mississippi River, it's Trahan. So
I think I should say Trahan then.
I don't like Trahan. That's not where I'm from, so I go with Trahan.
There you go. Chef, thanks for being here tonight, man. We started this whole series by asking some people on Instagram to nominate people. Your name popped up, and I looked at your Instagram, and I was like, dude, we got to talk to this good brother, man. Your food looks amazing. You guys got to check him out on Instagram. Let me tell you what his Instagram handle is, because it's not what I thought it was. Sorry. See, that's why I got it all fucked up. I got excited, and I wasn't prepared. But his Instagram handle is great, man. The guy's doing some fantastic food. It's Tall Tree Trahan. That's TallTreeTrahan. Could you put some more A's and T's in that fucking name? Good God.
Good. That name was given to me by some very dear friends of mine growing up in high school. And I'm 6'4", so, you know, you kind of get the gist of the tall tree.
Yes, Chef. Chef, your pics on Instagram are killer, man. They're next level stuff, man. I'm looking at this... this mocha mousse bomb, that looks unbelievable. Really, really great plates coming up from you, man. I love that. And, I mean, the semolina ramen with turmeric curry and poached prawns, that looks unbelievable, man. Where do you find this food from? Where does it come from in your brain?
Well, Chef, you know, it's something that I'm very fortunate to have went to school here in Louisiana, so I do have, you know, these South Louisiana influenced dishes, and I went to France for 5 months, so that's also in my brain. And then I worked at MoFo in New Orleans, which is a Southeast Asia meets Southeast Louisiana restaurant. So, you know, the ramen kind of comes from that, and you know, the prawns, that comes from the French influence, and just, you know, the curry. I like to have fun with everything that I've been kind of, you know, just kind of just brought into with, you know, and everything that I've grown up cooking, just very, very easy Louisiana dishes, I guess, in my mind. But, you know, I like to just take what I've learned across you know, my culinary journey and mixing it all together. And here at Milano, we're technically an Italian place, but ramen's pasta, and that's Italian, so hey, why not?
Dude, hey, listen, pasta's pasta, right? I mean, pasta was actually invented by the Chinese anyway, so let's just go with it, right?
Absolutely.
So, man, but your food looks unbelievable, but your story is kind of great, too, man. And I would say kind of great. It's pretty awesome, and I want to start with kind of in the middle of your story. You went to a really, really great culinary school. You went to the John Foltz Culinary Institute at Nicholls State University down in Thibodaux, Louisiana, right?
That's correct. I did.
I mean, what a great school that is.
It is. And, you know, just like any other culinary school, you're given the knowledge. You know, what you do with it is what you do with it. So, and I say this to anybody who is pursuing a career in culinary or who is already in that field. And if you haven't gone to school yet, or if you have, or if you're in school, you know, just take what you get from it. You know, that's a big philosophy of mine, is what you're taught, the information you're taught, you need to retain that and do what you can with it, you know, because culinary school is not about teaching you how to work in a restaurant. It's just teaching you fundamentals, techniques, and it's basically a building block of, you know, what you can do with food. And the world of food is limitless. You know, you've seen it all, and people repeat, repeat, repeat. And there's a pendulum in the culinary industry that, you know, will swing from side to side. And let's say this 5 years, you'll have, very simplistic plates, and everything is kind of centered. And then the next 5 years, everything is going to this kind of deconstructed plating. And that's kind of what I saw when I first started cooking, is that when I first started cooking, everything was very centric and everything centered on the plate and very nice, beautiful, but simple plate ups. And then it got into the deconstructed and a lot of ingredients on a plate and kind of scattered everywhere. And now it's kind of going back to that, you know, rustic plating style.
Yeah, it's almost like where it's, you know, we went through a little phase there, I think, where everything was so overthought when it came to plating up food. And you're right, like, it's kind of coming back to that old, just simple, kind of let the food fall, let the food go where it wants to go. And that's totally the realm, the world I like to live in.
Exactly. And I'm the same way, you know. If, like, you know, like they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's it.
And if you can go simple, go simple. Because at the end of the day, simple is easy, but it still can be elegant. And if it looks good, that's the first thing the customer is going to see. You know, that they eat with their eyes first. So if this dish looks good, it doesn't have to be complex, but if it looks good and then they take that first bite and your food's good, then it's great, you know. And that's what I do as a diner. You know, I'm not the type of person to just judge a restaurant based on presentation, but it's nice whenever it has a great presentation, but I'm all about flavor, you know.
Yeah, I've always taught, even I teach all the young guys and stuff too, man. Like, I tell them, listen, once you make it taste good and you've cooked it correctly, then you have carte blanche to make it look good. But you can make me the most beautiful plate in the world, but if it tastes like shit, shit is shit, right?
Exactly.
It's super simple. Hey, man, listen, so you went to school down there and you worked down there, but you actually did an internship here in the Northeast. In Rye, New York, man. Talk about the differences in food up here versus down there, because the last time I was down there doing a project down there, it was just back in September. Honestly, it was the first time I really, like, paid attention and noticed, like, it's a very, very different style of food. It's very, very different. The two regions are incredibly different, and I didn't think about it that much until I was there last time, where I was really paying attention.
No, it is. And when I worked in Rye at Westchester Country Club, the first thing that the chef told me was that we're not in the South, so keep the spice to a minimum. And I will say this, you know, working at this country club, where I was, it's a very prestigious country club, and it's all millionaires that, you know, have a share in it, and that's ultimately who's coming eat. It's not an open place where anybody can come eat. But the difference in food, I would say the biggest difference is the spice. You know, there's not that much cayenne pepper or red pepper flake going into these dishes, where you do have the ability to be creative. And it was kind of a restraint on me, you know, because I'm used to cooking these such flavorful dishes with dark roux and, cayenne and livers and kidneys and hearts and, you know, just utilizing the entire animal or protein, whatever it is you're using it.
Super rich.
Exactly. You know, you have that natural umami with the food that we cook down here. I don't know if you've ever had a traditional gumbo.
Yes, chef.
But, you know, it's just, there's so many flavors, and it's the building of flavor. You know, you start with a dark roux, and then once your roux is where you want it, you hit it with your onions to stop that cooking, but then your onions are caramelizing in the roux, and it's just such a building of flavor down here that I don't think the Northeast has as far as, you know, traditional food for them.
Hey, listen, I'm going to tell Chef Randy over there at the Culinary Institute, at John Foles Culinary, that you said I didn't have a real gumbo, because I was eating his, and I'll tell him that his wasn't real.
No, I said, I don't know if you've had a real.
I'm just messing with you, man.
It's the Chef Randy's gumbo, but I'll give him a run for his money on mine.
Oh, I bet you would. I bet you would. He's a good dude, man. It's very different. I think you're right. The richness and stuff like that. I mean, listen, I do have clients. It's funny, man, who still kind of crave that style of food, but it's still not to the degree that it would be down there with you. You know, down there in Louisiana, it's definitely very, very different. It's funny how regional food can be like that, and they're all delicious in their own way. You know,
right? You're right, and you know, it's as a chef, it's all about cooking to what your customer is wanting. You know, what their need is what you will cook, and that's kind of how I can best describe cooking in New York and cooking down here. You wouldn't cook on a regular basis the dishes that you would hear for the regular customer as you would in New York, or you wouldn't cook for a customer down here in Louisiana which you would cook for a customer in New York. So it's just all about where you're working, what you're cooking, and the customer you're serving, you know, because at the end of the day, it's all about the customer and what makes them happy. And I did have the chance to cook a gumbo and a jambalaya in New York. For every Sunday, we would do a buffet. And yeah. Working for Joe Albertelli, great chef, you know, he wanted me to kind of expose what, you know, my talents to these people at the country club. And I cooked the gumbo, and they labeled it spicy gumbo, and maybe three people ate it. You know, it was basically a fat meal. Because when you're cooking for people in the North, you label something spicy, they're not going to touch it. You know, nine times out of 10. Unless you're at I know there's a couple places in New York that have, like, Louisiana Kitchen in their title, or, you know, Southern Kitchen, and that's what people are expecting. But when you're at the country, nobody's expecting that. Don't label it spicy, just put it gumbo.
Yeah, they'll eat it, right? They don't know what spicy is, you know. Shit, that's great, man. That's a great story. Hey, listen, I judge the New York Hot Sauce Expo every year here in the city, man, and I can take the heat, brother. Bring it on.
Right. The funniest thing to me was whenever I did make the jambalaya, we did a paella every Sunday, and paella and jambalaya are so close that it's not even, you know. I think the main difference, you don't use saffron in jambalaya. And some people will put a roux, just put a dark roux in their jambalaya just because it's, you know, dark roux, Louisiana. But I personally do not. But it's all the same ingredients. And we did jambalaya, but we did use, you know, clams, mussels, shrimp. Sure. Instead of andouille sausage, I used chorizo, you know, and that went over really well with the crowd there. But it wasn't labeled spicy jambalaya.
So you gotta keep the word spicy out of it, man. That's a thing, man. Here in the Northeast, though, there is some fantastic seafood. You know, in the summertime where I work, I mean, I get the most unbelievable scallops and the most unbelievable fish. Like, it's just great stuff.
It is. It really is. And, you know, something that I didn't realize when I went up there is that we were getting fresh softshell crabs at the end of summer, and I didn't realize that was something that was done in New York. But we get them here, you know, but I just didn't realize that you guys had blue crab, softshell blue crabs at the end of summer, just like we do.
Oh, baby, they're delicious. I mean, think about Maryland blue crab. That's delicious stuff. I mean, it's, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I will be 100% honest with you here, Chef. My ex-girlfriend, she is from Baltimore, and she came down to Louisiana for culinary school at John Paul's Culinary School. And I've talked to your dad on several occasions about crabs and the blue crabs in Maryland and the blue crabs in Louisiana. And to be honest with you, he's told me that the majority of the crabs in Maryland are coming from Louisiana.
That wouldn't surprise me. You know, listen, it's
it has to do with Maryland was so over-farmed at one point that now there's such big regulations on, you know, how many crabs you can catch at this point in time. So I know it's much cheaper to import your crabs from Louisiana than it is to actually get Maryland crabs.
Right. Right. That's crazy. I mean, you're probably so right about that, man. But softshell crab is fucking delicious. I mean, I kind of want some right now. I'm starving, dude. Hey, listen. So after doing the culinary school thing, man, and working it out, but you grew up in a family kind of with a diverse family, right? With kind of roots all over the world.
I did. My father's mother is 100% French, and my mother's mother is 100% German. So both of them come from families that cooked, and that cooked really well. And I guess the best thing that stuck with me growing up is that my father's mother, she would cook a pork roast, but instead of making a traditional roux with flour and oil, she would make what she called a sugar roux. So you're basically making cacao, but with sugar and oil. And then once that gets, you know, to the color, you take that whole pork roast and you throw it in the pan, and you're basically caramelizing and searing that pork roast in sugar and oil instead of flour and oil. And it does the same thing. It thickens it. It still gets that great crust that you want on it, but it adds a different flavor than the flour and the sugar, you know, so you get that sweetness. And with pork, you know, you have that natural sweetness. You're getting the sweetness with the caramel. I mean, it's so delicious. And I used to just say that I will never, when I do a pork roast, I always use caramel and I use a sugar and sugar and oil instead of flour and oil.
Wow, and the sugar still makes it have that thickness to it?
Yes.
Wow, that's crazy, man. Hey, talk about where your restaurant is right now. I'm looking it up right now on the map and trying to find out in relation to the city, in relation to, like, New Orleans and stuff.
Restaurant is located in downtown Houma. It's right by the courthouse. It's about 55 minutes from New Orleans, southwest of New Orleans. I will say this, in recent years, Houma, I would say about 15 to 20 years ago, Houma or Terrebonne Parish had a population of maybe 55 to 60,000 people, and now it's around 110,000 people. And a lot of that has to do with the oil field industry. You know, there's just so much going on with that. And then you have the seafood industry. The culture here in South Louisiana for shrimp is ridiculous. Friday, I wasn't able to get shrimp from my purveyor, but it just so happened that my sous chef knows in his family, he knows a shrimper, and I was able to get 9-12 sized shrimp.
That's big ones. 5 pounds,
fresh out of the Gulf.
How much were they?
$5 a pound.
Shut the fuck up. Are you serious?
Ridiculous prices on these things.
Bro, you got to get me some of those and put them on, like, dry ice and, like, overnight them to me. That's a fucking amazing deal.
You know, and that's 9-12. That's big guys. So for $5 a pound, I mean, you can't beat that price.
No. Dude, those motherfuckers would be $25 a pound up here.
Exactly. So, you know, that's something that I just learned about Friday, and my sous chef just started with me maybe 2 months ago, and I'm like, motherfucker, why didn't you tell me? You know, I'm getting 16-20s right now for $8 a pound from my seafood purveyor, and you can get 9-12s fresh from the Gulf caught yesterday for $5 a pound? Are you kidding me?
God damn.
So,
beautiful too, right?
What's that?
They're beautiful too, aren't they?
Oh, they're super beautiful. And I make stocks with the heads, and it's just something that I haven't had the chance to, you know, find that local purveyor like that. But now that I have it, I mean, it's not something that I'm never going to go back to using my seafood purveyor.
Mm-mm.
Even getting seafood from the Gulf, but they're coming in peeled and deveined and, you know, IQF. And hey, I'm paying more money for frozen shrimp than I could be for fresh shrimp that were caught yesterday. I mean, you know, that's not something I'm willing to do anymore. So,
I just got a message from somebody that says if I do get a package from him, he wants to order 20 pounds also. So,
okay.
Everybody wants to get shrimp from you now. That's ridiculous, brother. Hey, so it's I mean the food down there is unbelievable. The next time I'm down, if I come down next year, I'm gonna come find you. That's a threat, by the way. I'm gonna come find you. You don't. I'll come eat all the food at your restaurant because your food looks like it's fucking fire, man. Here's what I'm scanning through the menu at the restaurant right now, the one that's online, and Dude, you guys are not expensive at all. Like, do you, is food cost a thing for you? Do you guys keep track of it, or is it not matter because the amount of business you're doing? I mean, literally, your prices are not expensive.
I'll say that my food costs are below 25%.
Shut up. Are you serious?
I am. And, I'm not going to dive too far into that, you know, because I don't want to, just give that information away, but
of course,
I will
say
that. And when I started here in June. When I was working in New Orleans, I was struggling to keep a 30% food cost. And I don't know what the difference is, but it's, you know, I guess it's the purveyors I'm using, whatever it is, but I was kind of grandfathered into everything. I was grandfathered into the menu, and you're looking at the menu right now. I would say about 75% of that menu is not my menu.
Okay.
But the way that it works down here in Home of Chef is people are very used to eating the same thing over and over and over. And my job, the way that I'm looking at it, is I'm trying to get this certain crowd out of their comfort zone. But I have to do that very slowly, you know, so I'm introducing these features. Every 3 weeks, we run a featured entree, a featured appetizer, and a featured pasta. So in order for me to get these folks, these customers out of their comfort zone, I like to do things a little bit different and throw in like that ramen, you know, or even the lamb dish with the lamb we're doing right now is lamb rack with mint pistachio pesto, roasted cauliflower, roasted fingerling potatoes, and then I toss that in a kimchi fish sauce caramel. If you can kind of,
what,
you know.
Did you say kimchi fish sauce caramel?
Yeah. So what I do is I make a kimchi, and then I make a caramel. I get that caramel to 308 degrees, and then I shut the heat off. I throw in shallots, ginger, garlic, lemongrass. Let that caramelize for about 5 minutes. I throw in star anise, Chinese cinnamon, Szechuan peppercorn, coriander, and cumin. Let that toast for about another 5 minutes. And then I take shrimp paste, which is a Vietnamese staple ingredient that I use a lot at MoFo. Shrimp paste and satay paste, which is a chili paste. Throw that in. Once that comes down to about 240, 250 degrees, I put fish sauce in it, and then that makes the fish sauce caramel.
How much fish sauce are you putting in there?
Well, for about a quart of caramel, I would say a quarter cup of fish sauce.
Wow, that's some powerful shit.
Your fish sauce brings in, and I have fish sauce and shrimp paste in the kimchi as well. So then I take a 1-to-1 ratio of kimchi to fish sauce caramel, and I just puree the shit out of it in the Vitamix, and then that's my puree for the cauliflower and the fingerling potatoes.
What the fuck? This is crazy talk.
And then I toss that shit in the fish sauce caramel, and then here's the kicker. I season it with a mixture of dried cilantro, mushroom powder, sugar, and salt.
Wait, why dry cilantro?
Well, it's just because if I use fresh cilantro, it's like a dried seasoning mix. So I dry the cilantro to where it's like a seasonal, instead of having the wet cilantro would kind of soak everything up and make clumps.
I understand. Wow, it add that moisture to it that you don't want in there.
Exactly. So dude, that's the seasoning I do is when I actually toss. I don't know if you're familiar with cilantro.
Uh huh. Oh yeah.
So I toss in fresh, fresh cut cilantro into that mixture whenever I fry everything, toss in the sauce, put some fresh cilantro in there, and that's what goes on the plate.
That sounds unbelievable, dude. Are you kidding me? The flavor just must be next fucking level on something on that.
That dish, you know, is one of my favorites that I've done here. I mean, it just pops.
That's unbelievable. So how did the crowd react? How'd they like it?
They love it. And, you know, like I said, the features that I've done are kind of just off the wall a little bit from what people are used to, but once they try it, man, I mean, they are loving it. All the tables that I go touch, and I try to touch every table that orders the specials and the features so I can get some feedback. And, you know, everyone is just they're raving about it. So I can't be happier as a chef, you know, and my owner, he can't be happier either. So, you know, we're just trying to get people in here to kind of change their attitude about food and trying new things.
Man, that's what's up. Joined tonight by Chef Patrick Trahan from Milano down in Houma,
yes,
Louisiana. A really good brother, man. His story is fantastic. Make sure you follow him on Instagram at Tall Tree Trahan. That's T-R-A-H-A-N. Make sure you follow him on Instagram there. Great stories. The motherfucker just told me he's making a crazy-ass fish sauce caramel, which is un-fucking-believable. Like, when you said it, Chef, I was like, ooh, really? Ooh, ooh. Then you start describing it, I'm like, oh, fuck, that actually might sound delicious. Damn it.
And, you know, I can't take all the credit for that. We did a fish sauce caramel at Mofo, but we didn't use the kimchi. You know, it, I just, like I said, I like to take things from what I've learned and infuse them with other things from other places, and it just, it works.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. That's what's up. That's what's up. Dude, much respect for doing that. I love that you're trying new things and trying to shake it up down there, because anytime you get someplace where people are used to it, shaking up is a good thing, man. So I think that's awesome. So for you, though, you know, you worked in Louisiana for a long time, man. You were running pretty hard down there, right? I mean, I know it can be quite a scene, you know, especially in the nightlife and whatnot. For me, it definitely was growing up. I'm sure for you, especially in a place like New Orleans, it had to be.
No, it was, and the, you know, the thing about New Orleans is that, I know they say that Vegas is the city that never sleeps, or New York, the city that never sleeps, but to be honest with you, New Orleans definitely never sleeps. Bars are open 24/7 everywhere in the city, and, you know, that can be detrimental to anyone that gets caught up in it, and, you know, especially in the service industry. You live a very stress-filled life, and especially where I was working at Mofo, you know, I started with them from the beginning, so it was kind of like honestly, there was all white guys trying to cook Vietnamese food, you know, so
right.
A very big learning curve for all of us, but once we figured it out, you know, it was like we swung a home run, you know, but It was very stressful. Once you get busy, and we were, you know, best new restaurant in New Orleans. We won so many accolades, and people came in, and we kind of weren't ready for it. We knew it was coming, but there was no way to prepare. And you know, I won't lie to you. I got caught up in some bad things, and you know, ended up going to prison for 13 months for DWIs, and. Just to let everyone know, it's mental health is a serious thing in this industry, and it's something I can't stress enough, is that to stay grounded with your outside life as much as you do with your cooking life, because I know as well as me, Chef, you know that once you know, dive into this career, it consumes you, and if you let it consume you, it can be detrimental.
It'll eat you up, man. It'll eat you up.
And no matter what city or where you're cooking, and I think all of us that do get involved in this industry, we have a passion for food almost to a fault. You know, it's something that we go to sleep and we dream about it. We wake up, we think about it. It's the first thing you think about when you wake up. And especially, you know, if you have a hard night service, I don't know about you, but when I go home, and as much as I try to forget about it, I go to sleep and I dream about it. You know, I dream about the things that went wrong, and it's a never-ending cycle of how do you deal with the stress of this fast-paced industry. And the way that I deal with it now, you know, is everything in moderation. But before that, I was just 100 miles a minute, you know, anything and everything I could get my hands on after work, I'm doing, you know, anything to just compress and to decompress from, I mean, in the service industry, it's you're running so fast, and once service ends, you're cleaning, you're trying to get the fuck out of there. You know, you make the kitchen spotless, you organize and write a prep list or pre-prep for the next morning, whatever you got to do, whatever the restaurant, you know, codes are. I've worked in different restaurants, and they have different different codes. You have a kind of close to open thing where you are prepping for the next morning. And when I worked at MoFo, Chef Mike's motto was service is a break in prep. You know, so
right.
The main goal, and then service was a break in it. So as soon as service is ended, you're prepping. As soon as service starts, you're done prepping, and then you get a break. Everything is about prepping to be ready. And the more prep you can get done, the better your service is going to be, the more fluid it will be, you know, the better off you are.
Mise en place, and baby.
A lot of these young cooks that are coming into the industry, you know, they and I was kind of, I just missed that stage of, you know, the Food Network and Chopped and all that stuff. When I was growing up, it had just became a thing. And I think the hardest part for me as a chef is to explain to young cooks that, you know, to be in this industry and to make it, you have to want to cook. It's a brutal industry. And if you don't want it, if you just want the fame, the glamour, and the glory that you see on TV, then you need to get your fucking ass out of the industry as soon as possible.
Ain't that
because
the truth?
It will eat you up and spit you out. And that's something I ran into in culinary school because I would say 4 years older than everyone else, you know, starting school. They were 18, I was 22. And I saw it so much that so many of these kids just did not know their head from their ass when it came to being in the kitchen. But they saw, you know, the rise of the culinary industry and the rise of these TV shows and, oh my God, you know, Top Chef and this and that. But those people that were on Top Chef just didn't show up to be on Top Chef. You know, they worked their ass off for 15, 20 years.
Yep.
To make it, you know, and
Brother, I say it all the time. Listen, man, I've done Food Network 10 times. Actually, 12 times. I've hosted TV shows. I've done all that shit. All of those things are a byproduct of 25 years in this business. Does that make sense? Like, being able to do those things happened because of 25 years in this fucking business. That's how I look at it.
And, you know, I completely agree with that. And, you know, Chef, right before I got arrested, this was in 2016, October 2016, I won the award or was selected for Daggett Magazine Top 30 Chefs Under 30 in New Orleans.
See, now you're jumping the gun on me. I was going to get to that.
Well, I'm kind of getting into the Food Network kind of thing, but as soon as that happened, I shit you not, 3 days later, I got a call at the restaurant from Hell's Kitchen. And they were doing interviews on chefs that just are sous chefs. You know, it wasn't executive chefs, but sous chefs
right.
That just won awards. And, you know, I talked to them and I did my interview and emailed them all of my information and all that shit. And a week later, you know, I end up in the slammer and no hopes of getting out. I was already on probation. So, you know, all that stuff kind of just fell through the cracks. But I will say this, the best thing that happened to me was that. And the reason being is because who's to say, you know, I just got selected for Zagat, top 30 under 30. I potentially could have been on Hell's Kitchen. And then who knows from there, you know, but if what happened to me wouldn't have happened, I could have had such a great and big reputation. And then it was inevitable that it was going to happen eventually. So no one really knew who I was and knew about me. I was just starting to make a name for myself, but no one knew about me to where I can still come back and, you know, rise from the ashes and do my thing and still make a name for myself. But that was the big thing for me was that, you know, I didn't ruin a reputation because I just started to gain that reputation.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
And to be honest with you, the 13 months I was in jail, I did not, I looked at cooking as something that I was never going to do again professionally. just because.
Can we talk about that for a minute, man? Can we talk about being there just a little bit, man? Because it's really interesting, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about that and kind of what you did while you were there. You know, how do you cope with that?
Well, the first 5 months, I was in New Orleans Parish Prison, or as they call it, OPP, and it was a brand new jail. It had been open for 6 months or so, but before that, OPP was one of the worst prisons in the country, from what I've heard. You know, and I was very fortunate, you know, to not be in the old jail, but at the same time, jail is jail. And in New Orleans, which is one of the most crime-ridden cities in the United States, you know, to be honest, I was scared because I knew I wasn't getting out anytime soon. But what I did is basically I was locked down in a cell for 19 hours a day. The other 6 hours, you'd come out for 4 hours in the morning, and then 30 minutes for dinner, and then an hour for the end of the night for rec, or basically to watch TV. You know, you had your social hour. But what
tell me, man, how does that work? Like when you just, I want you to back up a little bit. When you find out that you actually have to, you have to go to fucking prison. Like, you just hit like this amazing award with Zagat, and you're 30 under 30. You're about to take a restaurant to a whole other level. Now you have to go to fucking prison. Like, how does that hit you? Like, do you think your whole world just collapses?
Oh, absolutely. It sucked, you know. And this is, I was in such denial at the beginning. First thing I did was I called my girlfriend and, you know, told her where I was, this and that, and then I called my parents. And then 3 days later, I called my girlfriend again and I got her to put my chef on the phone, and I was so emotional at the time. You know, I was just, and like I talked to you on the phone earlier, the company was about to open up Maypop, which is Chef Mike Galata's fine dining spin on MoFo, with a little bit more Italian influence. And I was going to be the chef de cuisine of that restaurant. So I had all these things going for me, and then as soon as I got pulled over, you know, I knew that all was done, and I broke down in the cop car. I had a panic attack, and as soon as I got into the jail, they had to sedate me because I was just, you know, I don't know how to explain what I was, but my mental state was just, it was crushed. I spent a month and a half in the medical ward, which is like the psychiatric ward, I guess. And not necessarily the psychiatric ward, like suicide, but just the, like, I was super depressed. And at no point in time did I think I was going to commit suicide or wanted to commit suicide. I just knew that my life as a chef was done, or I thought that my life as a chef was done. And like I said, on that third day, I called my girlfriend, and she was working at the same place as me at the time. And, you know, I said, can you put Chef Mike on the phone? And it's so, I guess, ignorant to think back now and say, you know, the first thing he got on the phone, and I said, Chef Mike, do I still have a job? You know, and I'm like trying to hold back tears. And his response was, you know, I think you have bigger things to worry about in your life right now than if you still have a job. And that just,
your job was like all you had. Like, that's your life.
Exactly. And it hit home with me, and I broke down and started crying on the phone. You know, it was just something that once that moment hit, I realized that I was fucked. And there hasn't been that many moments in my life where I thought that I was just completely fucked, but that was the moment. You know, bend me over, tie me with KY, and just fuck me.
Jesus Christ, man. That's unbelievable. Like, And not only that, but you didn't go for 6 months. You were there for 13 months. So yep. What was your day-to-day? I mean, did you get a chance to have a job? Could you have gone to work in the kitchen at least if you wanted to?
Well, I did eventually get to work in the kitchen, and after about 3 days, I quit because it's the first day I was there, you're basically being trained on how to cook just shit food. And in Louisiana, I don't know if it is in the rest of the country, but Louisiana, in prison, it's 90% private owned. Okay. So anywhere they can save money, they save money. So you're eating for breakfast, you're eating, instant eggs, not bacon, or not sausage. Sausage is
not bacon, bacon. That's awesome. Sorry.
Whatever, and you get a biscuit if you're lucky. For lunch, it's hot dogs or chili Fritos. Lunch was like the best meal. And then dinner was always beans and rice, cornbread, and a vegetable. So you either had red beans, pinto beans, white beans, black-eyed peas, and that was the rotation. You had a rotation between four or five different beans, always over rice, always cornbread, always a canned vegetable.
No chicken, nothing like that with it.
Well, for lunch, every Wednesday was baked chicken. And that was like, you looked forward to that fucking baked chicken day. I'm in the dorm room trading four packs of ramen noodles for somebody's fucking baked chicken leg. Give me that shit. And you can either make commissary or you don't make commissary. And if you make commissary, then that's basically your money. You trade commissary items for, like I said, for chicken or coffee with the hot item. The instant coffee is what everybody wanted. That was your item of trade. For whatever you wanted, coffee was it.
So if you had instant coffee, that bullshit, disgusting Folgers instant bullshit, you could get whatever you want.
Exactly. And that was the top of the line. Then you had your Maxwell House instant coffee, which basically like shit in a cup with water. But people were still willing to pay for it. You put enough sugar and creamer in, hey, drink it.
Fuck it, right? Damn.
And cigarettes were not allowed. Cigarettes were banned from private prisons about 8 months before I got in there, but they still managed to get them in. But I will say this, for one cigarette, the people who were getting them in would take one cigarette and they would roll four tiny little mosquito legs is what they call them. Mosquito leg cigarette. It's about the size of mosquito's leg. And that went for $2 a piece.
Holy shit.
Right. So $2 a piece was four packs of ramen noodles. Wow. So it wasn't worth it to get a cigarette. Now, at the beginning, I wanted tobacco, but after about 2 months, fuck that shit, man. Why am I wasting $2 of my parents' money that they're graciously sending me to not starve in jail because they feed you shit in a private prison because they're trying to save so much money on a quarter of a cigarette that isn't going to do shit for me?
Did you get paid for your job while you were there? Did you get paid for working in the kitchens or whatever other jobs you might have had there or no? Like, or at least commissary credit or something?
In the kitchen, they get any job you had on the prison site, you'd get $5 a week in commissary.
Big money. Big money. That's unbelievable right there. That's righteous bucks.
A pint of Bluebell ice cream and maybe two packs of ramen with that. You could get a couple Snickers bars, if you're lucky. Commissary is basically a convenience store.
Like 7-Eleven, right?
Exactly. But you couldn't get Dr. Pepper or Coca-Cola. It was always the off-brand Coke, the off-brand Dr. Pepper.
It's Coke with the E missing. You get some Coke.
you get the Sam's Choice Cola.
That's
my
Sam's Choice. Getting that Faygo.
Instead of Dr. Pepper, it was Dr. Thunder.
Dr. Thunder. Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah.
So it was an experience in itself. And like I said about the kitchen chef, I worked there for 3 days, and it was basically one of the guards was over all of us, and she talked to us like we were slaves. You know, she just talked shit about everything. And I said, you know what? I'd rather sit in the dorm room in my bed than be talked to like this, because I know the skills that I have, but hey, I can't use any of that because I'm preparing canned beans, canned vegetables, cornbread, you know, so it
you
wasn't
look
worth
at her, you didn't look at her chef and go, hey, I know you're being a douchebag, but when you get a second, go on your Google machine and just Google my name for 30 under 30 here in New Orleans. And just tell me tomorrow if you still want me to help you in the kitchen or not.
That would probably weaken the hole.
That a what? That would have done what?
Put me a week in the hole.
Oh, that really would have. They wouldn't like that shit, huh?
Talk back to those people.
Damn. So the whole time you were there, man, obviously what a traumatic experience to have to go through. Bullshit, like terrible you have to do it to begin with. Like, we have people who are committing serious crimes in this nation, and they're going to give you 18 months. I mean, obviously what you did wasn't good, and it's not a good thing to do. But, I mean, there's definitely, I mean, people who are doing way worse things out there. You didn't hurt anybody. Sure, you could have, but you didn't. You know, I don't know if it was necessary to have to do all that, but when you were there, did you have any bad experiences? Did you have anybody trying to bully you around a little bit, or was it pretty low key? You kind of kept to yourself and just did your time and got the fuck out of there.
Well, you know, there was this one guy that tried to put it in my ass. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
That's not where I was going, dude.
But no,
that's fucking funny. I was like, oh shit, we're gonna go there.
I'll be honest with you, Chef. Here in Louisiana, it's primarily 80% African Americans, 20% Caucasians.
Right.
So the bullying was definitely there, and I got into I would say about 3 or 4 fights, just based on people trying to test you. You know, being a minority in prison. You know, you go to a new facility, and there's always these, I guess, the head honcho of of the dorm room, and they're going to test you. And if you back down, then they're all over you. You're going to be somebody's bitch, and not in the literal term of being ass fucked, but you will give them. You know, if they ask for something, you're giving it to them. Whether you make commissary or you go to lunch, they take your lunch plate, whatever. If you do not fight, you will be somebody's bitch. And, you know, I learned that very early on when I was in New Orleans Parish. I was fortunate enough to have a cellmate that basically gave me the ins and outs of prison life. You know, what's going to happen when you go to these private facilities. It's an open dorm room of 100 bunk beds, and there's about 120 people in the dorm. So people on the floors, you know, basically just massed anywhere because it's so overpopulated in Louisiana. It's ridiculous. And
so not everybody gets a bed.
75% of the people are there on misdemeanor drug charges, like possession of marijuana or DUIs. And the other, you know, other 25% are there on, you know, I call them real crimes. You know, so early on, I learned that. And when I did get to these facilities, anybody who tried to fuck with me, anybody who tried to steal with me, I'd throw a punch immediately, you know, because I'm not going to be the little bitch that you think you can get off on. And whether I lost or won the fight, most of them, I lost one fight, and it's because I got jumped by 4 other guys. And yeah. Hey, that is what it is. But
hey, man, listen, even that still, you proved your point. Look, four guys may jump you, but somebody's getting hurt in the process.
All is if you're going to fight for yourself. And once you do that, once you get to a dorm room and somebody tries to check you, if you fight them, whether you win or lose, nobody's going to fuck with you after that.
Because they know you'll fight back, and they know that they could probably get, that they can get hurt. It's fucking just like the animal kingdom, man. Like, you know, there's
the
animal's not going to try to get some food from, you know, kill an animal that I think it's going to hurt it, you know?
Survival of the fittest, you know?
What an amazing story, man. That really is just, I feel bad that you had to go through that, but, I mean, you did fuck up, and it sounds like you've come to terms with that.
I have, and, you know, I think the worst part was letting down my family.
Right.
And just, you know, to this day, I'll be honest with you, and, you know, I'm sure my family's going to listen to this podcast, but I don't think I'm an alcoholic, but they do. Right. Something that I have to live with for the rest of my life. And I understand it because you look at my track record, you know, 4 DWIs, and that it speaks for itself. But like we were talking on the phone earlier, you know, I know so many people that I worked with and would go to the bars with after work, and I didn't. Very seldom did I drink and drive in New Orleans. But right. when I did, I got caught, you know. And these other people I was with, every night they're driving home. And, you know, nothing. So it did open my eyes to basically the realization that it's not worth it. Regardless if I think I'm right or if I'm wrong, or if I think I'm drunk enough to drive or not, it's just not worth it. And if that's a message that I can convey to any chef, young or old, it's not worth it to drink and drive, because it creates problems. And for me, it just fucked my entire world up.
Listen,
you know?
Especially in this day and age right now with Uber and everything else, if you're going to drink, fine.
Right.
Leave your car, man. Pay the $25. Even if it's $50, pay the $50 to take the fucking ride. If you had an Uber when you were got in trouble, you know, would you have paid $150 for a ride if it would have kept you out of jail? Fuck yeah, you would have.
I would have. Looking back, yes. But in the moment, I mean, there was Uber. But in my mind, I'm like, look, I want my car in the morning. You know, I want to be able to wake up and have my car. But looking back, absolutely. I would have left my car 50 miles away and woke up early and gotten somebody to bring me to my car, you know,
that's
to not have
shit out in the morning, right?
And exactly. And, you know, one thing that my dad always told me and I took for granted is, hey, if you're drinking and you know, you need a ride, fucking call a cab, call an Uber. I'll pay you double of what that ride costs. And my dumbass didn't take him up on that offer.
Yeah.
You know, stupid idiot. Fuck it, I'm a drive.
And then you lost 13 months of your life, right?
Absolutely. I lost 13 months of my life. I lost a lot of my money. I lost a lot of my dad's money, you know. So, and you know, the hardest part, Chef, is regaining my family's trust.
100%. I can only imagine, man. And honestly, listen, we just met on the phone tonight, and I hope that we become pretty good friends, man, because I like you a lot. I think you're a really good brother. And honestly, if your family is listening, you know, just from an outside perspective of a chef looking in at another chef, you have a very talented individual here in your family who, in a conversation, really sounds like he's learned his lesson and made his mistakes, paid his dues, and is now trying to move on in his life. In this country, I mean, that's what we do for people. People make fuck up, they make mistakes, they pay their dues, and then they move on. And it's only fair of us as Americans in this country to take a good brother like Chef Patrick here, and he paid his dues. He paid his penance, man. He got in trouble, he did his time, and now he's back, and he's working hard and being successful. So we got to give him credit for that. And we can't harp on the past on somebody as much as it's hurt us, because that's their family. That's what we do. That's what you're supposed to do. I mean, you take the good and the bad. That's how it goes, man. That's what family means. You can look that shit up somewhere. I'm sure it's written. If it's not, I'll make sure it is. Don't worry. I'll figure out a way to put it somewhere, brother.
But, you know, I'm back and better than ever, you know.
Yeah, well, listen, that's what I want to bring up, man. I want to end this conversation, and I can't believe how fast. We've been on the phone for over an hour now. This is almost an hour now. It's crazy. It goes so fast, doesn't it?
Said it.
But dude, so you get out of prison and you're coming back into the real world, and you know, how
right.
do you go from that to where you are now? Like you came back in, you took a job as a sous chef, promoted to executive chef, you're kicking ass, your food is fucking unbelievable, you got a great restaurant. How do you go from prison to that? And how short of a time span was that?
Well, I kind of did have a segue, Chef. I got out in November of last year, and
it's only been about a year.
It's been a year and a month, basically. Yes.
Wow.
And you know, it happened that fast. And you know, my family can't be more prouder. I can't be more proud of it, of myself than, you know, it took me, and it took, honestly, it took 6 months, because when I got out, I was eligible for Medicaid and I needed shoulder surgery real bad. So in February of this year, I had shoulder surgery, and it was a 4 to 6 month recovery period. So June of this year, the beginning of June, I was cleared to go to work. So I took this job at Milano in June as a sous chef. One of my very good friends was executive chef here. And, you know, he didn't know much about food. He comes from like corporate kitchens, but he was just kind of tossed into this job.
Right.
So he hired me on to help him out. And, you know, the owner just saw my potential, saw my talent, and, you know, made the switch. So I took over in August. So you look at from June until November, that's 5 months. And what I've done for this restaurant, it amazes me, you know, and it amazes everyone else that knows me and knows the restaurant and where it was. And it wasn't in critical condition, but it was close to being in critical condition. You know, as far as it was basically teeter-tottering on staying afloat.
Wow.
And just what I've been able to do in the last 5 months, it really is amazing. What one person, you know, can do to turn a place around. And, you know, I'm kind of getting teary eyed right now, just, you know, thinking about and talking to you about what I went through in the last year and where I've come from that. And it's just, I guarantee you, before I went to jail, I would not have been able to, produce what I'm producing right now, you know, in such a short period of time. Just because I wasn't as in tune with myself as I am now. You know, 13 months of being in your own head by yourself and trying to figure out, you know, what your next move is and why you are in the position you are, it taught me a lot, and it's made me grow internally, you know, if anything. And that just, you know, I don't have words to express that. I really don't.
I mean, I just seriously, I mean, listen, unbelievable story. I mean, literally, brother, I'm proud of you. I couldn't be happier to know you now. And I see why you were nominated for this series here, because of your story is absolutely just unbelievable. And to go from where you were to the restaurant you're at now, making the food you're at now, you should be proud of yourself. And there's no shame in being proud of yourself. I tell people every single day of the week, man, listen,
right.
Today is November 19th, 2018. You only get one of those. That's it. You get one. And when I lay my head down tonight and I go to sleep, I'm going to ask myself. I do it every day. For just a little bit, I ask myself every day. I say, am I happy with how the day went? And I started doing this back in 2014. I live in Newtown, Connecticut, brother. My kids lived through a school shooting. Like, it changed my life. It changed my fucking life. Since that day, I ask myself every day, am I happy with how the day went? And look, man, the day is not all, it's not always yes. It's not always yes. It's not always like, yeah, I'm really glad how my day went today. But today, when I lay my head down on the bed, when I go to sleep tonight, I'm going to say, yes, I'm happy with it, because I got to talk to you, hear your story, and hopefully your story can inspire other people. Because, brother, I tell you what, it's unbelievable, and I'm so happy to know you, and I'm proud of you, and honestly, man, what an amazing story.
Thank you, Tim. And I have one thing to add to what you just said. And
please.
If you know, you go to lay your head down at night and you ask yourself if you're happy with how the day went, you know, there's so many people that lay their heads down and take for granted. And, you know, whether it be substance abuse or, you know, school shooting or something, they don't get to make their wrongs right. You know, we both get to go to bed tonight, and if we had a bad night tomorrow, guess what? We can make up for it.
Try it again.
And there's so many people that don't have that chance.
And we do. And that's one of the things that we should be proud
exactly.
of. Because we do, because we've worked hard to get to the fact, to get to the point in our life where we do, you know,
right.
and never take that for granted, ever. I talked in the intro of this show. We have a big event we're coming up to do with the U.S. Navy here in Connecticut, and these men and women, dude, I was on a submarine yesterday. They have their bunks on the sub. It's 125 people to a sub, all right? Stay with me here for a second, because this is crazy talk. 125 people on a sub, right? And they work in crazy 18-hour shifts. It's all weird. But because of the way the sub is made, because of the amount of people it takes to make this happen, for every two bunks, Chef, it's three people. So they call it warm cotton. So when you get back into your bunk to go to finally take a nap, somebody might have just gotten up, or someone might have literally just gotten out of there. So you're sharing a bed. It's two bunks for every three people. Isn't that crazy talk? Like, that's the world that we live in right now. And you look at where we are, and you and I, and we make food for a living. We make people happy. That's what we do. That's our job. We serve food, right? It's so rudimentary. It's so simple. We make people happy. We cook great food. That's our job. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right.
And people forget that, especially young culinarians come in this business. They want to come in, and they're like, oh, I made this foam, and it's fucking amazing, but this jackass didn't want it on his plate. Yeah, you're right. It's annoying. But you're supposed to make him happy.
Right. At the end of the day, the customer is what matters. And what they want, you do.
You're so right. And that's the point I was trying to get across in the intro, man. You just kind of really fully emphasized it right there. These guys in the Navy, man, they as long as the days they work and how shitty it is working on a submarine, they won't see sunlight for 70 days sometimes on the submarine. Right. But these guys will still work really hard in these galley kitchens that are fucking tiny to try to make food to make people happy. And that's what everybody looks forward to. They look forward to that meal because food makes people happy. Food is being served to them. And our jobs as chefs is to make people happy. And I don't think everyone should ever forget that.
Look, Chef, food is a cure-all.
It's a very powerful thing.
It really is.
Mm. And it sounds like from you and your experiences, man, you found that out in different – and I think everybody finds it out in different ways, and people who are lifers in this business figure it out. Not everybody figures it out. I think those who don't figure it out are not in the business anymore.
No, you're right.
But, brother, you're crushing it down there. You're killing it, man. You guys – Sorry about that. We had a little mic difficulties there. You got to make sure you follow Chef on Instagram at Chef Tall Tree Trahan. Is that right?
Yeah, it's Tall Tree Trahan.
Yeah, Tall Tree on Instagram. Right. Yeah, make sure you follow him there and hit him up and let him know, man, because his story is great. His food is fire. Brother, much respect to you. Much luck to you. I hope things go well for you in the future. I look forward to talking to you as we move forward.
Thank you, Chef. We'll stay in touch, and definitely the next time you're down here, come check us out, man. I'll guarantee you don't leave this place, not being cool.
Oh, look, hey, man, I'm looking forward to it. And listen, I'm 6'3", 250 pounds. That's a lot of food, brother. I'm just saying, like, I'm letting you know ahead of time.
No problem.
Hey, man, listen, best luck to you, brother. Thank you for being on tonight, man, and we really appreciate it.
Thank you, Chef.
All right, there he goes, guys. Check him out right there. That's Chef Patrick Trahan. He's awesome. Really enjoyed having him on the program tonight. What a great guy. What a good brother, man. Honestly, his story is just, it's next level. I can't emphasize to you guys enough to check out guys like him. Their inspirations are good for everybody. There's just nothing bad about a guy like that. His food is fire. He's got a great story. He's paid his dues. That's the kind of guys you want inspiring you as we move forward in this business. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us tonight right here on Plum Love Foods Live. We really appreciate it. Please rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. It makes a big difference for the algorithm. My name is Chef Plum. Follow me at Chef_Plum on Instagram if you get a chance. And ladies and gentlemen, please remember, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life revolves around food. We'll see you next week. Have a great night. Peace.
If you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.